Good morning. You've tuned in to North Idaho News of the Week. It's Friday, February 6th. I'm Jack Peterson. I'm here this morning with Chris Bessler. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Jack. And how are you today?
I'm doing pretty well. Knock on wood, I am one who has so far avoided any of the major winter cold flu things going around.
And COVID.
And COVID.
I'm here to testify about that. I got woke up on January 1st with COVID coming on. I spent 8 days confined to my room.
I'm feeling pretty lucky about it. It seems like almost everybody I know has had at least something this year, but I'm doing okay. Yeah. How about you, Jack Freeman? Jack Freeman's here, our third person in the studio, the reporter for the Daily Bee covering the city and education beats and transportation, as it turns out. But how are you feeling, Jack? How are you doing this
morning? I'm doing well. Good. Happy to be back.
Thanks for being here. A busy week in news, statewide anyway, and locally. And we can get right to the headlines. The Idaho House, it is official, has passed that bill, House Bill 557, the bill to repeal anti-discrimination laws across the state. For example, here in Sandpoint, they have a non-discrimination ordinance, or it's still on the books in one form, and this would completely prohibit municipalities from passing anti-discrimination ordinances. House Republicans were almost entirely in favor. All 9 Democrats opposed to House Bill 557, and as far as our delegation goes, Representative Mark Sauter was opposed to this bill, and Cornell Razor voted in favor. Now it goes to the Senate for their consideration. If passed by the Senate and signed into law by Governor Little, the measure would invalidate all such ordinances in Idaho's counties and cities that prohibit discrimination based on a person's sexual orientation or gender identity. So that has passed the House now and goes to the Senate. Also in the House, the Business Committee is considering a bill to strip counties and cities of all power to establish rules around short-term rentals, also of particular, you know, local significance here. This is House Bill 580. It is not going to a general vote on the floor yet, but it would bar municipalities from separately regulating STRs, as the city of Sandpoint does. And short-term rentals would not be able to be regulated, it seems, in any way other than the way that you regulate housing for long-term occupancy. A human rights commissioner, Estella Zamora, was terminated this week by Governor Brad Little after a social media and conservative blogger uproar over Facebook posts that Zamora made that were critical of actions by federal immigration and custom enforcement agents. No official reason was given by the governor's office, but Zamora has been terminated from her position on the Idaho Human Rights Commission. Speaking of ICE, the ICE Out protest drew a crowd of nearly 500 outside of the courthouse here in Sandpoint. That was on Saturday, and this past Saturday, a large turnout at our local ICE Out protest that was part of sort of a nationwide series of protests. And at the exact same time as that protest was going on, Mark Sauter was inside Sandpoint Community Hall, where he was holding a town hall about what's going on in Boise and his observations from the House floor. Representative Sauter was joined. This was at the second of 3 events that he had scheduled that day. He was joined in Bonner's Ferry by Cornell Razor, but was flying solo when he got to Sandpoint. Jim Woodward was scheduled to join him as well, but Woodward's son was in an accident, and Woodward had, I believe, flown to Seattle to be with his injured son at that time. I last I heard, Woodward's son is doing okay and is on a long road to recovery. The topics addressed at that town hall included the lake level, Lake Pend'Oreille's level, and the kind of timing of the raising and lowering of the lake, as well as the dams that control the lake and those repair operations, healthcare, particularly women's healthcare, and education. And you can find Mark Sauter's complete remarks at our website, actually, krfy.org, and we broadcast that live. Finally, getting to the business of the city of Sandpoint, where on February 4th, the city council met to make a decision regarding the City Beach RV Park. What to do about that? Myself and Zach Hagedon from The Reader discussed this issue at length, looking ahead of it when we were here last Friday. Now the vote has happened. And Jack Freeman, would you like to tell us what happened at City Council on Wednesday, February 4th?
It was one of the quickest unanimous votes I've seen from this council ever on an issue. As soon as the public comment wrapped up, which was around an hour, and there was a little bit of a snafu with Avril Hospitality getting their chance to speak. But as soon as Jason Welker was done presenting, mm-hmm. Pam Duquette was like, all right, RV Park. Mm. That's the motion. We're going to move forward and accept that grant. And yeah. Joe Tate made a small statement, and all six voted in favor.
Yeah. The public comment, I did not watch the meeting. I think, Chris, you did, though.
I did. I attended via Zoom.
It was about an hour of public comment about the RV park. And as far as most of it were in favor of the RV park, a couple of kind of public testimony against the RV park, not exactly in favor of the Avril Hospitality plan, but do I understand that more or less correctly?
Yeah, I think there was one or two people who came out and said, you know, you've got to work with the hotel, and if they don't want an RV park, we've got to find another use. Justin Dick was there, mm-hmm. former city councilor, who talked about turning that area into parking, using the parking and lieu fees that Avril Hospitality will be paying. But a vast, vast majority of the people were there to speak against the Avril proposal and in favor of the RV park.
Yeah.
There was one individual who made the point that what Avril's planning with the hotel, to put mm-hmm. in a conference facility that could accommodate a few hundred people, is something that the city needs to help with these kind of shoulder seasons, especially a bad mm-hmm. snow season like we're having now. That would give the kind of an anchor to the town to bring tourists in during these big shoulder seasons we have. Because they could recruit groups that are doing conferences and meetings. It's a good point, but it didn't go very far with the crowd there in terms of softening the ground for any kind of decision except for an RV park.
Yeah. The Avril, I guess... Avril was invited to give a presentation on their proposal. They reopened public comment to give Avril the opportunity to speak within the allotted 2.5 minute limit. What was their testimony like, I guess, which is pretty brief if they're just given 2.5 minutes and not like an agendized presentation?
Yes, it was quite brief, kind of, they were kind of scrambling to put it together because they thought that they would have the full allotted time. They basically were trying to say that their offer was not a replacement, but an alternative use, basically, to this is something that they've said kind of throughout this process, is that they want the decision to be not a financial one for the city. They want the residents to choose what they want. And this was their way of saying, we'll help fund that in a way. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there were strings attached to it quite a bit for them, but that was basically what that proposal was trying to curry the public's favor a little bit, which I don't think went over too well with the people in the room.
Didn't fly. Yeah. I guess the public comment was pretty overwhelmingly, was it in favor of an RV park or just opposed to the the alternative proposal from Avril Hospitality.
Well, it's both, of course. We should say this wasn't the public hearing. The public hearing was held last month.
Yeah.
And it went through the city's Parks and Rec Commission as well, which recommended that they go with the RV park as planned. But everybody was making public comment during the council's little public comment period that they have at the start of each meetings. So people are availing themselves to that. And the whole thing with it, as Jack mentioned, there was kind of a snafu with Avril. Avril had been told by the mayor that they could do a little separate short presentation, but it wasn't on the agenda, and that was outside the scope of a deliberation that didn't include a public hearing. So they had to reopen public comment and let them comment just like any of the other citizens that were there.
Yeah.
And I'll say one of the new things that came up. So Avril, in between the time that the Parks Commission gave their recommendation and this council meeting to make a decision, they came back with a proposal. And Jack, why don't you fill us in on what their proposal was? Because you wrote a story about that as well.
Yeah, so they were offering $950,000 to fund construction and design of an alternative use that wasn't an RV park, kind of matching the amount of the RV park grant that the city's now accepted from the state of Idaho. They were willing, you know, and this is all kind of the staff report was worded, they were willing to, so I don't know if this was a firm commitment or not, but they were annually $50,000 would come to the city from Avril in exchange for 20 boat slips south of the RV park for 30 years, rent-free.
In the Windbag Marina, I think. I don't know if it was specifically Windbag, but...
I think they had five in Windbag that they've always had, sort of right outside of the existing hotel. And then they, additionally, this would have been the 20 extending from this piece of property, what is going to be an RV park now, but extending from that piece of property, there are those two docks that extend out into Sand Creek, and those two docks would have just been reserved for Avril.
Yeah. Well, there's 36 there, and I think they wanted 20.
Oh, they right. Okay.
So a little,
not quite the
over
whole.
Half, not all of them, but yeah. And there was a couple more things in there, like they would like to be able to use any event space that was built for hotel events as long as they schedule it out in advance for rent free, and they wanted to have a seat at the table for their parking and Luffy's that they're going to be paying. So. That was kind of the strings attached in their proposal in exchange for the community basically getting to pick whatever they want. And there's a couple other things in there, but I don't want to run us through what was discussed last week.
As a bunch of folks opposed to the proposal pointed out, that those boat slips go for about $1,000 a year. And if you do the multiplication, if they have 25 boat slips, $1,000 a year, it's $25,000 a year. They wanted them for how many years, Jack? They wanted
30.
30 years. That's, you know, $750,000 worth of payback on their $950,000.
Yeah.
And that was a kind of a point of objection with a lot of people.
Sure. Understandable. So is this... is this now a totally done deal? Is this the last we're going to hear about? I mean, now they're going to they're going to accept it. And now, the vote has been taken. There's nothing further that needs to be done other than somebody needs to tell the state that they're accepting the grant, right?
They've already accepted the grant.
Okay.
So this is probably the last that we'll hear of the RV park. But as for the Avril Hospitality development, I don't think this is the last that we'll hear of it. They've gone back and forth. They still have outstanding permit fees that I think are around $210,000 that they need to pay to get their permits reviewed by the city and then start construction. So they still have, you know, floated a target opening date for that hotel of summer 2028. But with this decision, I think it's still up in the air about what exactly will change, if anything.
And Brian Avril was there. You mentioned earlier before we got on the air that you offered him an opportunity for comment, and he said, not right now.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
No comment yet. Okay. So we don't know. Yeah, we're now we need to see what their response will be to this. They, but at one point they had said that this would have a big effect on what they were going to do with the hotel, and I guess now we'll find out if the city was going to go forward with the RV park. Well, okay. I guess that's that then. Then it's going to be an RV park.
Yeah.
Now we wait for the sound.
I think
of
it goes into
equipment.
The planning and development part of it.
Yeah. Another thing that the city did, was it just this past week that they made, they didn't exactly go back on, but they, but the amendments that they had made to the zoning code, they moved to postpone those amendments. So the amendments have been made, but they're not going to go into implementation until there's a stormwater master plan.
Yes, right? Until the stormwater master plan is completed, as I understand it, which has been a goal of the city's for a little bit, but slow moving progress on that.
No exact date on when that would be?
Not that I could find, and the mayor said, I believe his wording was, it'll be quite some time before that's complete. But that the city staff would, move quickly as they could on it. Mm-hmm. But putting together a master plan is quite complicated.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Now, so, Jack, go ahead.
Jack, which Jack? What were you going to say?
The Jack to my left.
Okay, yeah.
You wrote a story on the fact that the Bridge Street sidewalk expansion is going to proceed. And this is after some tussling in city council over providing a use agreement to the owner of the property that they need to get on to build the sidewalk. Why don't you fill us in on what happened there?
Yeah, so the mayor basically went back to the property owner and said, is there any way that we can work something out? I think the property owner expressed that he did want that sidewalk to be built. So they kind of walked him through it. The mayor did, saying, hey, it doesn't seem like the council is going to guarantee vehicular access to Gunnings Alley from the north. But the city's always going to need to get fire trucks back there. They have utilities in the ground. It would be all but guaranteed. And the property owner said, you know what? Okay, let's just move forward with a different agreement that allows them to get in and do the construction and move forward without any, designation of public property.
Mm-hmm. And so this is the little strip of sidewalk that runs along what everybody's calling the hole in the ground, where the buildings that burned down right there at the corner of First and Bridge Street. And it provides access onto the walking side, I guess, of Bridge Street to get down to City Beach. And it's going to go from its current size to 12 feet wide. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. I think your story said six. It's 6 feet now. It doesn't look like 6 feet. No,
it's very windy too.
It doesn't feel like 6 feet when you're on it. Yeah. I don't know.
And part of it is that there's those, the big wall that they put up there that makes it feel even tighter. But I guess that's going to come down, obviously.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, that's what the mayor told me. Yeah, that's set to come down. And he said that they're hoping to have it done before Lost in the 50s in May, I believe.
Oh, yeah, that'd be nice. So does the wall stay down? Or do you know? Has that been decided? Or do they put the wall back up? But, it's not an attractive hole in the ground either way.
Yeah.
But I don't know if the wall makes it look any better or makes it look worse.
I'm not sure exactly what's going to be done, because this is going to build out to the property line of the property owner. So I assume if he wanted to, he could put the rusted sheet piling back up. But I think that's kind of a wait and see kind of thing. It is definitely not an attractive hole in the ground, but I think we'll need to see what the property owner does with that moving forward.
Yeah, and I'm sure he has, obviously. I mean, he's had some architectural drawings for the kind of building that he was thinking of building there, but that hasn't moved forward. And I don't know if those plans have changed.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, maybe there's a way to pretty up the hole in the ground with, put some wildflowers down there or something.
Yeah, make a little pocket park or something.
Throw in a waterfall down there.
I think last time you were here, one of the times that you were here recently, Jack, we were talking about that hole in the ground before this vote. Is there any... I'm guessing the answer is no, but any word on what's going to happen there and when at all? I mean, does this change anything as far as what, you know, is the property owner actually going to start construction on any particular timeline?
As far as I'm aware, this doesn't change anything. This was purely, because this is a city-owned sidewalk, so they had to work with the landowner to get in there to build the retaining wall for this sidewalk, but it doesn't necessarily show progress. This is a city project that's funded by a security bond that they gave them, but this is a city project that's focused on, you know, getting a wider sidewalk so when it is packed and people are walking to City Beach that they aren't spilling out into Bridge Street, which is already kind of a tight intersection there. So I haven't heard anything that would, you know, indicate that now that this sidewalk is being built, that they're ready to come to the table. I think that's, it's a separate thing entirely, even though it's right next to it.
Well, we probably got time for one more story that you reported on, Jack, and that's that Pondere is developing a new streets improvement and management plan. What is going on in Pondere?
They have so much going on in Pondere. I was out there for an hour and a half at their most recent council meeting. They've got big plans in the works. They're finishing up the their brownfields grant out there on Lake Pondere Bay Trail. But this specifically, this will just kind of be a the motion that they made at the meeting will be to hire a firm. I think it's Century West Engineering to basically go out and scan all the roads and grade them to say, hey, you know, these roads are doing fine. These roads need improvement. So that way, when they do start to develop this plan, they'll be doing some public outreach and they can kind of say, here's the projects that we need to do first. Here are the projects that we can kind of put on the back burner or we'll need to address. Streets are a big deal out there. Obviously, they get a lot of use on Kootenai Cutoff and they're trying to, you know, make it safer for people who live there. So nothing big quite yet, but it'll be interesting moving forward as they start to develop this and we can kind of get a picture for their future.
You know, I haven't prowled around in Pondere for a while, but as I recall, some of the residential streets are still gravel.
That could be true. I'm not aware of that, but that could be true.
I'm not sure of that myself now. It's been a few years, but we used to have gravel roads, streets in Sandpoint, right in downtown Sandpoint, actually, not that long ago.
So. Within living memory, huh?
Yeah, within my memory.
Yeah, that's funny. So. Well, we still have those nice gravel alleys in between the streets.
Oh, yeah.
There's still a little touch.
Those will probably be like that for quite a while.
Seems like, yeah. I guess the city of Pondere is, they're the little city with the big future, as they say.
Was there any discussion about plans for Field of Dreams? Anything going on with that in the near future?
I think we'll hear a little bit more about that. I believe in March, the council and mayor said to have a meeting to kind of discuss those local option tax funds, which a lot of that is supposed to go towards the Field of Dreams. So we'll probably hear a little bit more about that, but nothing quite yet. A lot of the focus recently has been on the ice rink, making sure that's being used well and making revenue and things like that since that's kind of the city-run effort right now. I think we'll hear more about that as their local option tax builds up money and they can kind of actually spend it and when it starts to really pick up use in the summer.
Mm-hmm. That ice rink does look pretty busy whenever I drive by.
Oh, yeah.
Is that getting the city's considering that to be pretty successful?
Yeah, it's going pretty well for them so far. They were thinking of extending the season a little bit so that the youth hockey could play a little bit more there. They've had a lot of requests for that, especially just because it's been kind of, you know, such a bad snow year. People are looking for things to do. It's been a little bit slower than last year because of all the rain. You know, nobody wants to go ice skating in the rain. But when it is good weather, they are very happy with how it's going.
Nice.
Like tonight. Supposed to be clear and cool, but not too cold, right?
I think that's right. Should we do a little a look at the weather?
Let's say the weather's kind of in the news. You know, this is one of the warmest on record, or the warmest on record.
Yeah,
yeah.
It is, yeah. And the looks like continuing areas of fog today and tonight, but yeah, no precipitation until tomorrow. But there is a chance of rain tomorrow. Little chance during the morning and afternoon, and then as evening rolls in, a high chance of rain, 80 or 90% as the evening comes. But the temperatures are in the highs, continue to be in the 40s. It looks like until as far as this forecast goes out, about until next Wednesday, we're going to have highs every day, at least in the 40s and 41. Yeah,
that's that's pretty warm for February, first week of February.
It is.
I will mention, I just took a look at the Schweitzer Mountain Cam. It's sunny up there, folks. If you want to get some sunshine, go up to Schweitzer. They do have 51 runs open, so it's a low snow year, but they're, you know, making what lemonade out of the lemon if you can. So that's worth checking out. And what's going to be falling is rain down here this weekend. Hopefully that'll be snow up there.
We're our time comes to a close, but I do want to ask Jack one more thing about the spot bus. You rode the spot bus, Jack.
I did ride the spot bus.
Did you have a nice ride?
I did.
What do you take away from your experiences on the spot bus?
Yeah, so I rode the spot bus paratransit, which is, you know, kind of the one that helps people with disabilities kind of get around and go places. And that was just such a fun time. The driver, everybody was really nice. I wrote a lot about how it felt like a community because everybody who got on, they had a conversation topic because, you know, this is their one time of getting out of the house for the day. And so they wanted to talk, and you got to meet a bunch of new people who are living their own lives. It was really cool to see and to speak to. Got to spend a lot of, I think I wrote it for about 2 hours and got to meet about 8 to 10 different people. So that was a really fun story to do just because, you know, it's not every day that my job is just sitting around and talking to people and hearing about the fun things that they're doing or the things they're passionate about, you know, talking about going to the library or reading ancient Egyptian history and stuff like that. So that was a really fun one. Cool experience because I think, and I talk about it in the article, but the people who need these buses really need them. You know, it's not like they can just drive. I think one of the passengers who I rode with was upwards of 95. And so these people need it. And so it was cool to just get a glimpse a little bit of what that life is like and what the opportunities that are provided for free for them.
It's that spot bus does provide a pretty valuable service to those who are lacking mobility.
I've ridden it a few times. Have Jack, have you been on it?
I have been on the spot bus. The other, the regular spot bus,
And I will say, I think it's kind of fun to take a trip around the town.
it's right because you don't. When you don't have to drive or worry about, you know, where we're going and what are we going to miss the turn or whatever. It is kind of you kind of look around a little more.
Yeah, you see more.
Then we are out of time. The last thing I want to ask is who's going to win the Super Bowl? What do you think?
I'm a huge Seahawks fan, so go Hawks.
Okay.
Would love to see that.
And do you think they're going to win?
I do, yes.
Yeah, you know, they're set up to win, but you got to have this latent fear that something like the last time they played the Patriots in the Super Bowl could happen. Any of these teams, they have a bad day. The other team has a good day. It could go anyway, but go Seahawks.
Yeah, we're trying to bury that hatchet of the what happened last time. So hopefully we can.
Yeah. Well, there you go. I'm also cheering for the Seahawks, but I actually think the Patriots are going to win. I think there's something.
What?
I do. I think.
What do you base this upon?
Because I think the luck of the Patriots will continue. And they will foil the Seahawks.
Well, if there's any justice out there in the universe, they've won a whole bunch of Super Bowls. And
yes, no, I wouldn't be justice, but I think that's why I think it might happen. Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll see, Jack. We'll revisit this question next week.
That's right. Also, Sam Darnold was a quarterback for the Vikings, who
That's your turf.
And he did not do very well. In the clutch, he did not perform.
You're saying in the clutch. But in the clutch, yeah. Well, that gives him extra reason to come down here. And
he's got to prove himself.
Yeah. He's been great in the clutch all through the playoffs. He pulled out some real tough plays there when they needed him.
Yeah. Well, this is fun. Maybe we'll talk to Max next week about sports and that change of pace a little bit. Yeah. Time for Otto's Eclectic Mix. Thank you very much, Jack Freeman of the Daily Bee, for breaking down the news this week. And thanks, Chris. See you, everybody. Here's Johnny Cash.